Everybody, welcome to episode 3 of Late Night Gamers Podcast. I'm Nick Persanowski. With me is Tim Madden.
Hello.
Steve Morgan.
Steve Unit.
Charles Caldwell.
Hello.
What is going on, guys? How are you guys doing?
Not too bad, not too bad, not too bad.
Charles answered for all of us.
I know. It was easy.
Good enough. Good enough. Charles, since you answered for everybody, what's going on in your life right now?
Oh, pretty much the same old. I went to Seafood Fest this past weekend in Hampton, New Hampshire. Had a good time. Ate lots of lobster and scallops. But I realized in amongst all of that, that 120,000 people on one day coming to one event is just too many.
Oh my God. So the crowd.
So even though we were on the ocean and there's a nice ocean breeze, when you're in there and you're trying to get your lobster roll or your clam chowder and there's 100 people packed around you, it's not a pleasurable experience. Aside from that, had a good time. Didn't eat the $15 lobster roll because it wasn't as good as the $9 one. But I did see a kid who was wearing a Watch Dogs t-shirt, and I asked him if it was from PAX, and it was. It was indeed from PAX, and he knew exactly who I was talking to before I even said Watch Dogs. He's like, yes, that's from PAX East.
Nice. Steve, what's going on?
Nothing much. Same old. I did play the Elder Scrolls beta on Friday last week. Prime time.
Was it as comparable with the one we played at PAX East this past year?
I didn't actually get to play it there, so did you guys get to play it or did you just get to see it?
Yeah, we played it a little bit.
You got to play it? It's probably really similar. It looked a lot like Elder Scrolls, Skyrim, basically. And it was cool. It was a stress test, so it was a massive lag. Basically, I spent the first half an hour logging in. I spent this next half an hour trying to get the first NPC to talk to me in the tutorial. And then I spent the next 10 minutes getting a weapon or something, and I think I was a rogue or something, and I got a bone arrow, I shot a skeleton, and then the servers went down to reboot or something, and I was So I only got to play for probably a good 15 minutes max. So I didn't even really get to go through any progressions of skills, but it seemed nice. The latency was bad, but it was kind of polished. It seemed and it was action-based. You shot bow and arrow.
Were you playing first person?
I was playing third person, but you could easily have switched. I just felt like it looked cooler. I could see more. I don't know.
When we played in PAX, they didn't have the first person.
Oh, okay. Yeah, they had it. And it looked just like Skyrim, where you could see your hands and stuff.
Cool.
Tim, what's going on with you?
Not much. This is semi-gaming related, but when I moved out to Chicago about a year ago, I started playing, getting a little bit more serious about Magic, and so I've been playing more competitively for a year now, and they just announced, well, they didn't just announce, but they just started spoiling the newest set, which is called Theros, and for anyone who likes Magic, it's pretty much insane. It's kind of like a Greek-Roman mythology set. But some of the stuff in the set is just really, it's really weird. They have kind of enchantment creatures that's two things together. And it's so far, it looks really cool. And if anyone here is interested in Magic, I would suggest, or anyone who's maybe played a long time ago who's thinking about getting back into it, I think now is a good time. It's really, it's, if you look at Magic fairness over the years, it's gotten a lot better. You know, there's not one deck that just destroys everything. It's a lot more fair now, and I think if you're looking to get back, now is definitely a good time. But
even across the different decks over time, if you played an old deck with one of the newer ones today, would it be as good?
Old cards are amazing. If you have old cards, especially the old frame, definitely I would hold on to those and maybe have someone who plays look at them. but it's toned down, but at the same time, it's hard to explain. Some things are toned down, but other things are ramped way up. It's hard to explain without actually playing, but...
So there was different cards like enchantments that weren't necessarily as taken advantage of, and now you see that they're really ramping up with enchantments.
Yeah, well, just this recent set has, like, weird enchantment things. It has, like, creatures that are also enchantments, and then it has, like, artifact enchantments, and it has gods, it has all this weird stuff.
Weird.
But the game has gotten fairer over the years, and with this recent set, I think it's really cool. It's kind of, like, slowed down a little bit. I think it's the perfect time if you're looking to come back and try it out. It's slowed down. I feel like it's a little bit easier to get into.
That's awesome. And you've won some stuff out in Chicago, right?
Not really anything serious. I played a few things and did.
Yeah, break out your belt.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I've won a few F&Ms, but no like serious tournaments.
Nice. Well, I don't have too much going on. I pre-ordered my PS4 back June 11th, which was the night it was announced, and as soon as it was on BestBuy.com, I ordered it. I think it was like 11:35.
And since then, you've been having visitations by PS4 in your dreams.
Well, yes, I can't wait for it to come out. But I called the Best Buy that I ordered it from because I did store pickup, and I asked if there was going to be a midnight launch at the that branch location or whatever, and the girl that I talked to goes, I really doubt it. And I was like, okay, so there's not going to be a midnight launch event for the PlayStation 4. I was very explicit with, and she goes, no, I'm just going to go ahead and say no. And I was like, okay, well, I don't really trust you. You sound like you don't know anything. So I emailed the branch, like the store manager, and he goes, we will certainly have a PlayStation 4 midnight launch event. And I was like, okay, well, maybe you should actually tell your employees that this is occurring, because they're telling people, like, misinformation.
What are they, forging, like, appliances or something?
Yeah.
What's a PlayStation 4? Is that the new A-Tag?
There is going to be a midnight launch event, and I will definitely be attending, and I'm super excited because I took the day off already from work, and I'm going to spend basically, I don't know, 48, 60-something hours playing video games after I get it home.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's the
way to do it. Very, very pumped. I plan on beating the two games that I pre-ordered. Which I pre-ordered Killzone Shadowfall because that seems to be the kind of the main game that they're launching with, and then Knack, which is really random because it looks like a kid's game, but it's Mark Cerny who did like some of the Sonic games, and that kind of excited me. But speaking of launches of new consoles, this week Xbox One launch date was announced as November 22nd in the US, and I think it's November 29th in same day in Europe too, which PS4 will be November 15th and in the US and November 29th in Europe. I don't know. What do you guys think about the launch date? Do you think it's going to screw up Microsoft with the whole Xbox launch if they're going to fall behind PlayStation?
It's not like a huge fallback. I think with like last gen, they were so much early, but they were like significantly earlier than the PS3.
Right.
So that gave them a big boost. But this is so close. I don't think it's going to have an effect.
I mean, they're so close, and I mean everything about the consoles are. Unless you're getting it day one, I really don't think it's going to make a difference.
It makes me wonder whether people are actually going to, like, since it's so close to Black Friday, it makes me wonder whether people are going to wait for some sort of special for their console, because at 22nd, it's like, when does that fall when you compare it to Like the 22nd is the Friday. I guess it's the
Friday before, I think.
It's the week before. But I mean, still, that's kind of, it's kind of odd.
It's going to sell out before Black Friday.
I'm not sure. I think they did probably hold some back.
Maybe. I doubt that they do a special, though. I think they just want to get as much money as possible, unless they, like, raise the price for Black Friday.
Or include some games that they held back otherwise.
Yeah, that's true.
And, interesting, this week, too, is the first Xbox commercial came out, and it, didn't mention games once.
But you can watch TV on it.
So, yeah.
It looked pretty awesome if you're watching TV.
so is any other device.
No, but I mean, in the defense of the commercial, like, it was clearly trying to, like, cater to an NFL audience. So they were showing, like, football-related things, but...
Yeah, they focused on, like, fantasy football leagues and stuff and how you can play it on Xbox, and I don't do any of that, so I can't really...
do it. So I thought it was kind of cool, but, I mean, it's still just odd to me that, like... that would be their only commercial. Like, I understand that commercial would pop up, but, like, for it to be the first one, I was a little surprised, I guess. That you would think that they would have, like, some of the titles that they're launching first and then kind of throw those in, like, as side teasers, you know?
Maybe they're trying to cater to the parents of the players who aren't necessarily interested in, the video games that they're going to be buying their kids.
If they're advertising, like, fantasy football, they're obviously trying to cater to, like, young guys. It's basically what it is, right?
Yeah, I think it's really, at this point, it's kind of a, in Microsoft's mind, it's a battle for the living room. You know, they're biggest competitor in that sense. They want to be the one thing that's in everyone's living room. And they're more of a competitor with, like, the Apple TV and, you know, the new Google Chromecast thing. You know, their focus is more on dominating that space than it is competing with Sony for gaming at this point.
Yeah.
Seems strange.
Yeah, well, another thing, you know, with Xbox and everything, it seems like even with the new Xbox and PlayStation 4 launching, we're getting a lot of 2D side-scroller games, which is a little bit of a surprise. And that actually brings us to the question of the week from Everett Vigor.
Do it now!
Do it, come on, kill me! I'm here! With the success of 2D side-scrollers in the online store for Xbox, PS4, and PC, would you consider purchasing a AAA full-price game of the same style and level of promise / playability, but with a longer playthrough time that you see with the games, like the style of game, and if they're done well, I think that it's definitely possible. I honestly, personally, I like them a lot, but I don't know if I would spend $60 on any of the ones that I've played so far. Typically because I think it's just hard to, like, get that much gameplay out of it. Personally, I just think it's difficult to put that much content in. But, with that being said, there are some games where I've gotten a $60 worth investment out of, like Terraria, or something like Rayman Origins, or even, like, Rogue Legacy, where I've played for 3 or 4 days, like, non-stop, whereas I could do the same thing with something like The Last of Us and bust it out in, like, a day and a half. So, it's definitely possible. I just think it's tough to sell it to the normal person.
Okay. I would agree with that. I mean, I loved a lot of the... Like, I haven't been playing some of these games, though, because honestly, they haven't been on my radar, but I loved the 2D games that came out, I mean, when I was a kid, and that's all the games that I would play would be like Felix the Cat. I didn't mention to Nick earlier in the week about Felix the Cat with his little tank and some other games like Altered Beast where you transform into something. It's really about changing the dynamics of those games and keeping it keeping it fresh so that it corresponds to the other AAA titles that exist, whether that be like having different concepts, the storyline of those games. I mean, the storyline has always been hit or miss with those kind of games, whether it's kind of like a periphery item. I mean, you're not so much focused on the storyline of Altered Beast as you are as the fun playability of being able to transform into a bear or to upgrade into like a cat into a tank. It's just a fun game. But if you look at some of these, I mean, if I was really to go ahead and pay $60 for one of the 2D side-scrollers, I mean, I would be looking for a game with a substantial time, a substantial amount of gameplay in it, more than just some of these games. Like, and we were going, I was going through and playing some games earlier in the week, and you look at how long it would take to play those games if you just devoted a few hours a day, and you could beat them easily in maybe a day or two. But for a full 2D side-scroller game that would be worth $60, it would have to be 20 hours worth of gameplay, and I'm just not sure that that's something many of them do.
Yeah, I mean, I think a big part of it, especially for people from our generation of gamers, is nostalgia. And you know, we grew up on NES and Sega Genesis, and all of those games were 2D in some sense, whether they switch between isometric, top down, like The Adventure of Zelda was, or if it was just straight side scroller. And
Rygar!
Rygar was so good.
It had both elements. It had everything.
Yes. Well, that in that sense, it was similar to The Adventures of Link, number 2 on NES. But anyways, getting back to the question, I don't know. I mean, I think a lot of 2D side scrollers now, especially, are coming out with challenges. Rather than just beating the game, you're actually given okay, you can do a speed run, you can do it on this different difficulty, you can do it there's all these challenge maps that you unlock after you beat the game. And Guacamelee, I don't know if you guys have any of you ever played that one?
I haven't played it, but I've heard a lot about it. It's on my list.
Yeah, it's awesome. I played it on the Vita, and I mean, it's amazing. It's just I think the big thing now is to get a 2D side scroller out there is to have a pretty decent storyline, if you can. And it has a good storyline. It's going from the dead world to the living world, and you're switching back and forth, and only certain platforms are available in each world or whatever, and you can you have all these different abilities and stuff. I don't know, it's I think it's just expanding upon just the hack and slash that you're going from from one end to the other, and you just gotta kill everything in between.
For me, I think the thing is too, you can't confuse 2D side scrollers and 2D games now with ones that we played in the past, because those games were really bad in most cases. Think about it. We're getting to the point now where most gamers now don't know what that was like to play a game where you just literally could never be, Battletoads or something. So those kind of games were just bad, and they were also limited in content. You didn't have that much memory to do things that were cool. So a lot of times, Altered Beast, you just turn into a bear and then you start beating something up, and that's the epic part of the game. That's the most amazing thing you can do. Whereas now you can implement a lot of things items and all these things and storylines and multiple chapters and things like this. I mean, to be completely honest, I would say probably in the last 3 years, my favorite games have been games like Bastion and Terraria, and games that weren't necessarily 3D. And I don't know, it's just I don't see why it wouldn't happen. It's just people have to put the time and effort into it to actually make it a good game. It you realize that gameplay is actually a little bit more important than just having really pretty graphics.
Yeah, I think if you look at kind of the trend of 2D side scrollers, it's almost predominantly it's all indie games. It's all games that were developed by, small studios, one or two people. And I think, honestly, the majority of people who would play 2D side-scrollers are kind of at the outer edge of the 18 to 24 bracket. It's people who played 2D scrollers when they were kids. And if you're a AAA developer, you're looking at the bracket, you know what I mean, you're focused on this young bracket of kids who at this point grew up playing Halo and you know, 3D shooters, and to them a 2D side scroller is like, what the hell is this ancient crap, you know? But for us it's such a huge nostalgia trip. It's, you know, it's like any you know, dying breed. It's something that it's really niche at this point, and I think it's honestly, I think it's only going to get smaller unless they can manage to really innovate, and they definitely do. There's some insanely awesome 2D side scrollers, and you know, I wish them the best of luck. I don't see the big developers ever taking it on unless there's some breakthrough, some huge moneymaker.
Well, I mean, like right now, Ubisoft. How do you say that?
Ubisoft is how I always say it, but
yeah, Ubisoft. Anyways, Ubisoft does Rayman Legends, and you know, Rayman Legends are all the Rayman games, basically. But you know, they're kind of they're a larger developer, but it's also an outlier compared to the other stuff that they make, because they're making Assassin's big open Creed. World games. Yeah, huge sandbox games, and it's just completely different, but I guess it's reaching a different audience than those other games are. And, you know, Capcom, you know, we went down to the Capcom conference or talk or whatever at PAX East this year, and that's when they announced DuckTales Remastered, and you know, that's, yeah, they're getting the nostalgia thing from people, but they added on a whole bunch of stuff, and they made it in HD. I don't know how you make like 2D graphics in HD. Slightly sharper.
I can see the pores in his in the duck's face.
Apparently, ducks have pores now.
Yep. Bill pores.
Well, he's a humanoid duck, isn't he?
That's true. It's like Howard the Duck.
So that got announced, and I think it, you know, it came out pretty well. I think it got a pretty good score from most people, but I think in most cases they just say to play the old one if you have an NES. And I just took that out recently too, so upcoming on Xbox, Xbox One and PS4, there's also, you know, there's a whole bunch of kind of more indie studios that are making Rezogun, which is from Housemarque. They did Super Stardust Delta and Super Motherload from X-Gen Studios. Dragon's Crown just released recently. That's like a 2D action platformer. I think with the 2D side scrollers now, they also just need something to separate themselves from other stuff, you know, from other games. And Dragon's Crown actually animates in almost entirely by hand, which is a pretty crazy way of doing things, and it adds like a really like gorgeous picture to the game. So
yeah, I feel like, you know, for a 2D side scroller to be big, it really has to differentiate itself and either, you know, meld really crazy concepts or just do something that's really different. Because at this point, it's, I think, you know, having played 2D side scrollers, you know, half of our lives, it's like we've almost seen it all. So you really have to do something that's out there to catch people, you know.
Starbound, yep. Calling it. Check it out. It's good. Have you heard of this game? It's like Terraria. It's like 2D, like MMO, kind of Minecraft-y. Looks real good.
That sounds cool.
It's got a really big following. Play starbound.com. Check it out. It's already like having pre-orders, and they've been supposed to be going into beta for like months and months and months, but I mean, they've already raised like millions of dollars. It looks legit. I mean, it's pretty cool. So I think like something like that could work, but I agree with Tim. I mean, he makes a good point that, I mean, especially as computational power increases and like computers and like consoles are becoming more powerful, it's tough to like sustain like a low resolution game. I mean, when you can just make games that are higher, you know what I mean? I mean, it makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Just make it into more artful representations of the game. They did that with Bastion. I know it's a different type of game, but I mean, you take something that's 2D and you make it more artful.
Sure.
Yeah, that, another game, I think it's called Fez. Seemed pretty cool. It's like a 2D, but it also has another, like you can turn it and kind of add an extra dimension to it, which is pretty cool.
Well, all this talk of nostalgia and 2D side-scrollers kind of brings us right into our retro game review this week, and that's Ninja Turtles from the NES. Konami made it in 1989. And I think all of us have played it at one time or another, and
the day that we played it.
God, I played it yesterday for a couple hours, and I did not beat it, but I got up to like the rooftops, and I basically played until I ran out of continues, and then I just gave up because it was. I was like, I really need to eat dinner, and I need to do other things. This is taking too much of my life. But anyway, as a child, it was one of our favorite games just because it was the Ninja Turtles, and you know, Ninja Turtles were like some of our favorite things growing up, and it's too bad it's so frustratingly painful to play. You'll be going, you know, it's a platformer, you're jumping from one thing to another, and there'll be a small gap, but the ceiling is too low, so if you don't jump absolutely perfect, you'll hit your head on the ceiling and then fall back down, and then you have to go back through the entire platforming level, and nothing, like, once you kill something, it doesn't disappear, it like, just respawns in the same exact place. So if you go forward, kill something, go forward just a little bit, oh, and then go back, it's there again. And then so the screen just fills up and it starts slowing down and it's driving nuts.
Yeah. When I was playing through it earlier this week as well, I was noticing that aside from those things you mentioned, that some of the creatures in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, you're just like, what the hell is that? Like, you get to a certain point, and they're all of a sudden, I mean, you see the typical things. You see, like, the footman, you see random bugs, I guess, and then other things that look normal, wasps, I don't know. But then you get to a point, and everything just turns surreal. It's like they threw in creatures from, like, Castlevania or something, and like Mega Man and Castlevania and any game that they could find where they're just new creatures. They threw it in there and said, the turtles can take care of that. Yeah, no problem.
Yeah. This guy's on fire.
Yeah.
You know, he throws fireballs. I don't know why.
They turn into little dancing, flaming children that follow you around.
I mean, the game has, like, zero logic in it. Like, you...
Nope.
If you're in the sewer in the first level and you fall in the water, you die. You're a turtle. Like, and there's even a level later where you're swimming underwater under a dam. So it's like, it makes no sense. Like, it's just a bad game. This is like, I really like challenges, and I really like to, like, you know, beat games that, like, especially like go back and beat games that I haven't, that couldn't beat when I was a kid. And, you know, this is one of those games where I spent a long time trying to beat this game, and it's really insanely difficult. I got all the way to, like, the last world, and it's just insane. There's guys that just one-shot you. Like, it's complete nonsense. There's so many things about this game, I can't even begin to start about it.
Well,
I mean...
Well, in true NES fashion, you know, there's no save capability. So, if you get to a spot, you're like, oh, this is the best I've ever done. Well, you better have a couple more hours to play that night because you can't save it. And if you shut it off or even bump it a little bit, it's going to freeze.
Yeah, it's completely insane. I mean, just Google like Ninja Turtles NES, and like the 10th picture is just a picture of the turtle swimming through those electrocution friggin' kelp that, and it just says, and just kill yourself. And that's exactly how you feel. It makes no sense.
So that's like, and the worst part is like everything's electrified underwater, which I don't know how they designate what water is electrified and what isn't, but you go any like, and there's just like these dangly little finger worm things, and they suck you down into them, and you have to be like so precise to get through any of this. That I've watched several videos on like people that have done speed runs and like, you know, not losing any lives and whatever, and they still don't go through that level without losing any life. It's like, you lost a square of life. Square of life.
I remember when I went back to beat this game, I beat that level and I just went nuts. It was like the best thing that I could ever done. It was basically like beating a game. I was just like, oh my god, I finally beat this. Because like, that was the level when you were a kid, when you got to it, you're just like, why? It's like game over. You knew it was going to happen. You couldn't beat it because you'd be like almost dead anyways, and then this is bad.
Yeah.
I just picture the developers like, these little gremlin creatures in a little cave, like, ah, well, this is how we'll torture children, a whole generation of children who love Ninja Turtles, make them hate the Ninja Turtles.
This is like one of like angry Nintendo nerds' best rants, because it's just like, there's a couple things in this game where like, there's a couple of parts in the game where there's like pizzas that you cannot get, like the walls are coming in with spikes, and there's like at the very bottom of the, like you come in from the top and like at the very bottom there's like a pizza, and it's right next to spikes when it starts coming in, like there's physically no way you can land down there and get it, like it's just there to piss you off. It's a complete joke.
Yeah. And one of the characters that I didn't remember was one of the enemies is, After you beat the dam and you're going through one of the, like the weird warehouse buildings, and it's this guy that if you slash him once, he like goes down to his knees and grabs his face, and then he explodes into four tiny guys, and they're just like bouncing around and running around, and then you kill all those and they explode into more guys. I'm like, oh my god. And then there's just, like, robots shooting fire and lasers and...
There's, like, legs that are on fire that are jumping around. I mean...
Yeah.
In true NES fashion, enemies that make absolutely no sense and are horrific if you ever were to see them in a 3D game. But on 2D, everything is normal. You just gotta slash them a few times and then they disappear.
Yep. And there's, like, manta ray things that fly around and dive on you. Oh my god. My favorite though is when you're driving around the, I think they call it the party van. Is it the party van?
Yeah.
I think that's what it's called. But you get inside the party van, you're driving around, and there'll be foot soldiers, like, you know, running around, and you can drive at them, and they just, like, pop.
Boom.
And explode. Like, yeah.
And the worst part is, like, when you get hurt in the van, you get out, and whatever turtle you're using is hurt now. You're like, what the hell? Like, this is BS. It's terrible.
Maybe that's, like, some sort of, like, mind meld to the party van. I'm hurting!
So many things wrong with that game, but it's also one of the greatest games on NES at the same time.
In our words from high school, it is terrible and excellent at the same time. Going on to some things that don't hurt your brain so much. We've got a little segment on gaming and cognitive function.
Yes, I will be talking about cognitive function in video games. So there's been a few news articles recently that have talked about the elderly in video games, and one of which was that playing video games when you're elderly helps rejuvenate cognitive function in ways that, like, normal activities can't. And so it helps you remember things more, helps you focus on specific tasks more. And this is something I've always found to be true, is, like, I don't know whether it's just me being addicted to a video game that I have to play it in order to have excellent focus, but it's interesting that this is happening to people who are elderly and playing video games. It may, in my mind, it may just be that they need something to do, and this helps them regain that focus.
Well, I remember seeing a statistic that said that the more TV you watch, the more likely you are to develop like Alzheimer's or any sort of memory loss. I think what gaming does is it makes you think, you know, it engages you.
That interaction.
Yeah, that's something that a lot of old people don't have.
Yeah, and I think the study actually it was in Nature, and I guess for every 12 hours played or something over the period of a week, I think they got 6 months, like that cognitive function and the ability to pick up things better and their reaction times and everything, it actually increased and stayed for 6 months after they did it. So I'm thinking to myself when I read that, like, okay, so 12 hours a week times however many, I probably pay 20 hours a week. So if they're getting an additional cognitive function for like 6 months, I've got like 6,000 months behind me right now.
Yeah, we can quit now and just be good for life.
Use no brain function whatsoever. Just lay in a bed.
I'm just going to coast.
Yeah, I think the most interesting thing about that was that it was not just immediately following them playing games. It was long-term, definable, like, improvements in their mental function. And in addition, it was multitasking, as they found that multitasking is improved with people who play video games. And, like, that just makes logical sense to me, because whenever you're playing a game, it's never just you going in, doing one specific task. There's so many different core components to any game that kind of now I just take for granted when I'm going in and playing games. Like, the first time I played a video game, like, a dedicated video game, there's so many different components that you need to think about when you're playing a game. And any new game that you play, you need to rework the whole framework of how you think about that game. Granted, there's some things that pretty much stay the same, but multitasking is always going to be essential for any game. I mean, so many different tasks where multitasking isn't so predominant, and playing games really is one of them.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, especially now that we're seeing controllers with, like, 18 buttons, and, you know, you have to hold one down to focus, and then another one to shoot, and then another one throws grenades, and then another one can crouch, and then another one. It's like, holy shit, if you can remember all of these things to do, and you're, like, you're not even thinking about it, it's just, like, it's just muscle memory, and you have that hand-eye coordination, because you're not only, it's not like you're staring at the controller and you're using that to do something. It's your hands are literally the only things on the controller, and you're paying attention to the screen, which is, I mean, corresponds to the controller, but it's like your visual stimuli and the physical stimuli are two completely different things. And I mean, I think that's really, really where gaming is helping to improve stuff, especially, I mean, I think we'll see a difference in generation once we get to, you know, elder care. The other thing we were looking at was a TED Talk by Jane McGonigal, and she brought up some good points of like four core things that, you know, that people that play games take a part of, while, you know, some other elderly people who are in elderly care or older may not have. And it's physical, social, emotional, and physical, social. What was the fourth one? There's a fourth one.
Porn.
Yes, Charles, porn.
If by emotion... I wonder what emotions she's talking about, rage and extreme happiness.
Well, she did talk about how, you know, people who play games have a better sense of, like, dealing with trauma, and, like, you know, trauma in games is as close interactively to real life as you're going to get without actually experiencing it in real life. So, I mean, I think some people would consider that desensitization, but I think at the same time, like, it can definitely help you deal with certain negative situations in a way that other people maybe wouldn't respond to as positively, or not positively, but just as wouldn't have the same stress.
Yeah, I think the big difference there is that you don't, it's not something that you become desensitized to in the way that you feel like it's not a bad thing. It's just, it doesn't shut you emotionally down as fully as if it had happened to you without playing the game.
Yeah, I think what she was really talking about in her TED Talk is how games are kind of like a training mechanism for everyone to become these heroic people. You know, they train you to you know, I think at one point she mentions WoW and the billions of quests that people have collectively done, and you know, it in general, just the games set you out to be this heroic person, and the hard part is taking those skills that are gained there and then transitioning them to the real world, and you know, using those skills to improve the world. I think that's really where kind of the disconnect is. Ultimately, games just make us all stronger, and they mentally prepare us for the world around us.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. Basically, that her big thing was like that. I mean, when you complete quests and stuff, it's like empowering, right? Like, it empowers you. Like, if you have a challenge, or like if you have a quest, or like if you want a max level or whatever the heck, you beat a game, it's like it's empowering to you. It feels like you accomplished something, and like when you do that type of stuff, when you go into the real world, like you're empowered to like complete whatever you're trying to do, you know, in your job or like in your like you know, in your life. So, I mean, it makes a lot of sense. I just think sometimes you take it for granted when you don't like think about it in that way.
Yeah, and she talked about the social aspect too, and you know, you go online and you play a game, and you know, you're keeping in touch with people that you, I think she said, you may not necessarily keep in touch with if you weren't playing the games, but you get online, you play games, you talk to people, you kind of get to know how they're doing, and I would kind of equate it, you know, to the same thing, like for sports fans, you know, people who go to see a game or, you know, watch a football game or a baseball game or something, and it's kind of like we all do something individually and play or watch or whatever, and then we go to this event, and it's like, this is a social interaction. You don't go to a game just, you know, to watch the game, like strictly watch the game. You go there, you go with friends, you go with, you know, a significant other, whatever it may be.
Other fans.
Yeah, exactly. And the socialization doesn't necessarily even have to be with people that you know. And in the same sense, you know, you go to play a multiplayer game online, and 9 times out of 10, you're not going to know the people who are in the lobby, and unless you're like actually inviting one of your friends to play. So,
yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, I can say for personally, like, there's certain people that I talk to and don't talk to more, like depending on what games are out. So, like, I mean, like for example, when a new WoW expansion comes out for me, or like a new COD or something, I'm much more likely to be interacting with like some of my friends that play those games like on a daily basis, you know, and talking to them like through voice servers and stuff like that. I think it's a little different now with like having like multiplayer games and voice chat and video chat and things like that. I think people don't realize the social implications of playing games. It's almost like it's a really good way to stay in touch with people and meet people and stuff like that. I mean,
yeah.
Case in point, this podcast about video games.
Yeah. We would never talk to each other unless this podcast was happening.
Nope. You'd be dead to me.
Once a year. PAX East. We'll see you next year. That's another thing. PAX, like, video game conventions, they're like, you know, they're like the Super Bowl of of video gaming. And you go to these things and it's like, holy crap, this is all the best stuff. Like, people are announcing new stuff. It's crazy. You're around, PAX East brings in like 70,000 people over 3 days. It's crazy. And you go to parties, you know, it's not just about the convention, but you're going to parties. All four of us have met, you know, I don't even know how many people, but that we actually keep in close contact with, or fairly close contact with, outside of the convention. So
yeah, and it isn't even, like you say, it isn't necessarily always about the video games. I mean, we only spend, when we go to these events, the amount of time that we need to see the stuff that we want to, and then we go out and hang out with other people. It's just, you hang out with people, you party, and you have a good time.
And we're all cognitively smarter.
Until my brain fails, and then I can't think of anything.
All the talk of science brings us to our top five.
Indeed. So our top five this week are top five failed experiments in games. So, in no particular order, our first one here is Portal, and I guess GLaDOS, or GLaDOS, I don't even know how to say that.
GLaDOS.
Yeah.
Hello, and again, welcome to the Aperture Science Computer Aided Enrichment Center.
So that's our number one. Portal is just, I think it's scary kind of to think of Aperture Labs and to be like stuck in this little box, you know, be a guinea pig. I don't know, it's just kind of terrifying.
Artificial intelligence.
Yeah, that too.
Charles is artificial intelligence.
Charles is Robin Williams from Millennium Man right now.
Yeah, right? Good lord. Oh god, I hate that movie so much.
That's about as scary as it gets.
Oh, that movie is just painful. Alright, I'm gonna get on to my experiment gone wrong. It's kind of a twofer. It's the Bioshock universe, and I don't know why they thought choosing a place to have a new society at the bottom of the ocean or way up in the sky would ever be a good idea. There's just no good to come of that. I mean, trapped at the bottom of the ocean, you're all just gonna turn against each other. Obviously, that's what happens. And then trapped in the sky, it's like one little thing goes wrong and everyone comes falling down.
That's like the two extremes.
Exactly.
It's just, you don't choose totally inhospitable environments to start a new civilization. And you also don't infuse into that a component that's going to make the population clinically insane.
It also seems like it would be ridiculous to engineer, like, having, like, in Colombia, like, they have, like, waterfalls and stuff. Like, yeah. It seems like it might be a little energy inefficient. I don't know.
Yeah, they're using, if they're not producing energy from the water, they're actually using energy because they're, like, shooting. It's basically a giant fountain. And then in Rapture, spoilers, would you kindly, and, That whole experiment going on, and I won't even go into it because I don't want to spoil it for anybody if anybody hasn't played it. But
yeah, make sure you skip over that part.
What a freaking craziness that is!
Big Daddy, little sister experiment going on. It's just like, really? Why would you think that would ever be a good idea?
Well, yeah, you can save her or suck the life out of her. That's no emotional experience right there.
I always killed her.
Dude, you gotta get that good ending, man. I'm telling you.
Yeah, the good ending's awesome.
Oh, I've seen it.
Yeah, well, on YouTube.
The bad ending, she... what's her face just gets mad at you, that's it. So, I guess number three, I was gonna talk about the... basically just the Resident Evil storyline in general is an experiment gone wrong to the extreme with the Umbrella Corporation and, you know, producing the progenitor virus.
T-Virus.
Yeah, progenitor and T-Virus. and you're getting all these, like, you know, I guess they were trying to create like soldiers. They were trying to bioengineer soldiers and stuff for warfare, but they were shit was scary. Like, it was awful. And I mean, the thing I remember the most is playing through the Resident Evil remake on GameCube, and like when you come across Lisa, oh my god, she's awful. And like,
yeah, whatever scientists they had at Umbrella, they were obviously totally insane.
Let's just, yeah, like,
any game where they integrate some version of viral manipulation and DNA sequencing, it's just, you know, it's a terrible idea.
Yeah, I'm gonna take this blob of flesh and put arms on it. Pack that up.
And a less terrifying experiment that, but still ridiculous, is, I mean, they kind of ripped off Resident Evil in this effect, but the prototype and prototype 2, where you play as the character who's basically just a virus. And, like, who in these games, why were they manipulating viruses? I mean, don't they realize that viruses are just entirely harmful?
Awful. Steve. What do you got?
I got my number 4 here. This is the experiment from Half-Life. Yeah, so this was an experiment on test teleportation. And I'm not really sure, you shove this crystal in this big beam, and then shit just goes cray. And so there's like aliens portaling in and stuff. And then, well, I'm not going to tell you all of it, but you kill that big fat thing at the end. It's crazy.
It's crazy. The big fat slug.
You kill that thing from Dune at the end. It's crazy, isn't it? So, yeah, that was a ridiculous experiment gone wrong, but one of my favorites of all time, so...
I never played it.
No!
You never played it?
No, yeah. I never played it. I need to get, like, the orange box or something.
Yeah, well, like, Half-Life 1, that's, you know, it's whatever portal, and then everything, like, the whole universe breaks down. You get, like, these weird-ass bugs. You get, like, blobs that you throw. Like, nothing makes sense. There's these weird alien dudes with one eye. It's like, what happened? The universe as you know just melted and nothing makes sense anymore.
Zombies, crabs jumping on people's heads and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
That sounds awesome.
Alright, I guess our last one here is probably the worst of them all. Basically, well, it's essentially Dr. Robotnik and anything he put his horrible little mustache on.
Little mustache, that thing was like, forget, it was like an arm length.
I think, you know, if you look at Dr. Robotnik, he's definitely not the kind of person you would want to leave around your kids. I think that's the number one reason that you should call him a failed experiment. This is a creepy ass dude.
Oh my god, he's awful. And then, I don't know, I didn't understand what he was doing. I mean, I think he was trying to get, like, create some utopia place or something, but he was, like, trapping forest animals. And
just look at Charles right now. He's got a freaking huge stash on his webcam.
I just put a giant mustache graphically on my face for all to enjoy.
Well, I'd say that brings us to the end of our podcast this week.
We covered a lot. We laughed, we cried, blah, blah, blah.
we're all smarter.
Or at least I'll be able to cognitively function, though my body may give out.
What we're playing, I'm playing the same thing. Hitman and, that's it.
I marginally improved on Dota 2 today.
No.
Well, after we played it and I bailed on Steve because I had to go on one of the games we were playing recently, I read through this whole long, like, 20-page internet post on Dota and was like, because honestly, in Dota 2, you get slapped in there, and you told me it's a ridiculous learning curve. And so I was like, I'm just going to try to understand exactly what's happening in this game. So I had my first victory today.
Nice, congratulations. Kid did me dirty the other day after the podcast. I went to play with him and he just left me.
Steve, what are you playing?
Playing Dota. I also started playing Heroes of New Earth, like, with an old friend that's basically just like Dota. Actually, it's older. I think it's like 3 years old now. It's not, definitely doesn't have as good of like, as large of like a, player base, but which makes it actually, like those two components, the fact that it's old and it has a lower player base makes it so much more unforgiving. Like I played it, like my first match, some guy was like, dude, you suck. And I was like, dude, this is my first game ever. And he was like, I can tell. And everyone was just like, get the hell out of here. And I was like, dude, this is like, anyone want to like give me a, throw me a tip or something? So I got wrecked in that, and I still every time I play I get wrecked. But it's like it's based on Dota, so the characters have like different names and different names of abilities, but most of the abilities and items are the same.
Nice. Tim, what are you up to?
I'm really ashamed to say this, but I unfortunately resubbed to WoW because I was really, really bored.
Oh god.
And little did I know, I log in and I see someone's online. And Mikey Bean's playing. I'm like, what the hell? It's not that asshole.
Kid's in a hardcore raiding guild.
Yeah, but yeah, so this new patch out today, so I figured I'd pick it back up and play it a little bit.
What was included in the new patch?
It's a new raid zone, new like island thing. It's a lot of stuff actually. It's actually really, it's like super welfare epics now. You go to this new island. And they basically just hand out epics. You just walk there, and there's boxes on the ground. You just pick up epics, like, and they're like eye level like almost 500. So it's like it totally nullifies the rest of the game. Level to 9, you go to this island, and that's it.
All right. Well, that is the official end of our podcast. So thank you, Charles. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Tim. Thank you, listeners.
Bye.
Can you guys hear me right now? I'm still here.
We lost Nick.